quickly anyway. And so they're just, if they can't get everything that they want now, then they'll just do it in a stepping stones process.
Well, I got to tell you, though, in my research tells me that they've overstepped a little bit, and they're having problems keeping this the flow of their own conspiracy under control. I think one of the things that's happening here is they do not want gold to appreciate just yet. And what's happened is we've got gold falling out of contango, which is a positive relationship between the future price and present sales, and it's going into what they call, it's moving backwards is basically what it's doing. It's tragic how bad this is happening, but it's a backwardation is what they call it, and it's when the relationship between the futures, the price settlement, and the present availability all fall out of whack, and this portends some terrible problems for people in the government trying to control gold. They're going to lose control of it shortly, and they don't want to. You can see their efforts to try and stop it. And the only reason they would work so hard to try to stop something is it's because it's not in their benefit right now.
Well, yes, and I mean, they don't want the price to go up until they've got it all.
That's right.
I mean, there was something else, funny enough, recently. I mean, and I really think that we're going to start to see a backlash against this group when people start uncovering these names, but they won't get it from the mainstream media, they'll get it from their own due diligence and research. I mean, there was a guy, I think his name was Carl Lund from Lehman Brothers, and he was questioned as to why last year his salary was about $500 million. And he said, oh no, it wasn't $500 million, it was $260 million, and the rest were bonuses. And I mean, when you've got people earning that sort of figure, and then they go cap in hand to get taxpayers to bail out their failing organizations, you know, they should have all their money taken off them.
Well, that's my goal, is to, first, I mean, if you look at the about me on my site, it's to take these people out, put them into prison, try them, convict them, and get rid of them, and confiscate whatever wealth they or their family have ever had as a result of what they've done. And just that alone would replenish our coffers if we just did that. Now, you know, whether or not we're going to get that far in my lifetime is a big question. However, I do see an awakening. Andrew, you want to talk a little bit about some of the other things you're watching and seeing about? I see that the rumblings under the surface. I think I told you, or it was maybe Rafik, about... I've said this before to you, 1,700 hits for Zionists and Zionism when I first started, along with you, it's now up to 24 million from 1,700 on the internet. Now, that will tell you right there that that's more than exponential growth, that is through the roof growth.
Well, I think it's great to see that, because, you know, we kind of, you were a bit ahead of me, and it was me switching from Alex Jones to you as the person that I listen to mainly that really set me on my way with the Rothschild timeline, and you know, it's great to feel that part of that has influenced this.
It has, though. I mean, you know, you've sold, what, 20,000-30,000 books total between you and Tex and everybody else?
Yeah, I think it's sort of around, because it's available in Japan now, it's translated into Japanese. I think it's around 15,000, but I mean, the thing is, I mean, I've actually run out of my copies. I know Tex is doing another print at the moment, so people can't get them from me anymore. They have to go to Amazon or textmiles.com or whatever. But yeah, and for me, it was, the book was just a way of kind of, when I did my research, one thing I struggled with a lot is a lot of these online books, and they're very difficult to read. It can be hard on the eyes when you're, you know, looking at a screen for that length of time. And so that's why I put it together in a book. But now it's out there, and so now it's all up for free on your site, so people can read it on your site.
Yep.
So it's always been about the information with me, and I think a lot of people out there, it's about the money. And that's the Alex Jones crowd. But then even now, Alex Jones, I think there was something that you put up on your site recently where he's actually come out in an 8-minute clip. I think Oldnir got hold of and put it up.
Yeah.
Where he basically says, it is Zionism. They're the people behind it. But they'll say that once, and then they'll, I presume, be going back to the Germanic death cult.
Well, he spent one 15-minute truth, and then he spent 5 days going backwards on it.
Yeah, the thing is that you can let that little bit out, and then he can say, well, I have said that before, but, you know, not everybody listens to... They may have missed that clip, but that's why it's important to get that circulated far and wide, but I'd encourage the listeners to do so. It's a small clip that you can just attach to an email.
But what you need to do when you're sending it around is say, why has it taken him 14 years, 15 years of being in this to finally say the truth? What was keeping him back before? And I'm going to tell everybody that he's controlled opposition. At the very minimum, he's in it for profit, but at the most, he's doing this as a controlled opposition because too many people know it's Zionist Jews now. Look at these people in Obama's camp now. I mean, it's all the prominent Zionists from the Clinton administration are all in power now, and it is as bad as you can get, and I don't see that we're going anywhere but down. And you know, interesting, the British economy is in as bad a shape as America right now. Your housing market is absolutely in shambles. Your manufacturing base is non-existent. And I got to say that, you know, I don't see positive things happening in America or in Britain.
Well, no, and I, as I said to you in a private call, I just get up and I live day to day, and... you know, at some point, I imagine that my job will go. So, you know, you just try and get through it and do your research and try and wake people up. And then, I mean, I think what is important is if people do store up food and if they've got land, if they try and actually, you know, dig the flowers up and start growing something useful there.
Yeah, easy stuff. You can throw, you can throw onions and carrots in your garden. You know, get rid of the flowers and put carrots in and onions and throw a few pepper plants in there and a patch of potatoes and stuff. And hey, you might only be responsible for 10% of your food for the year, but 10% of your food might be that percentage you need to get over the hump.
Well, yeah, and then it's your other stuff like pasta and rice and what have you. I mean, you know, I kind of quite like simple food now. I can just have spaghetti with butter and some Parmesan cheese, you know.
Yeah, but you still need those fresh veg, huh?
Yeah, that's true, absolutely. And so it's things like that. And people also need to, you know, keep a sort of an amount of money secure if there's a bank run. You know, they don't need lots and lots, but maybe enough to last them a couple of weeks a month.
Yep, that's right.
And then other things, obviously the gold and silver aspect, you know, get out of the banks and get into that, protect yourself.
Well, I would recommend people try and get into silver if they have a small amount of money because it's easy to negotiate in the marketplace. If they've got more of a nest egg, you know, in the tens of thousands, certainly if they can get their hands on gold, they may have to pay a premium for it today because it's... The bullion is no longer available for sale, but you can pick up coins still at a premium. But the fact is, you know, and I've said this not necessarily for a profitable investment, but rather as a preserver of your value. In other words, I think the minimum you'll get from gold if you buy it now is that 10 years from now you will not have gone backwards in what you've done. Whereas if you hold on to dollars or pounds or euros and you think that your interest rate at the bank is going to give you an appreciation, you are out of your ever-loving mind, and you will be worth, your savings will be worth less and less and less, and 10 years from now, it'll be worth a fraction of what you put into it.
Yes, I mean, the other things that people can get into is stuff that they can barter with. I mean, they may... You know, a listener, he might not be a smoker, but if you get a couple of cartons of cigarettes, then they're very important to somebody who smokes, and you may be able to use that to exchange with people.
That's right.
Food or what have you. You know, bottles of liquor or something like that.
That's right.
It's something you can store that is actually going to be useful to people. And I think also with silver, of course, you mentioned on a private call, but if you've got... denominations of gold that are worth, you know, several hundred pounds each, you know, one coin or have you, like a Krugerrand or something, then, you know, how do you break that down if you just want to use a little bit of it? Whereas with silver, you get it in smaller denominations, and so it's easier to use to buy essentials like food and what have you.
That's right. That's right, and it's somebody, I don't know who, if it was this guy, Fetsky there, he's a professor from Hungary. He said everybody is going to have to be their own central bank, because when the fiat currencies fail, and between the time of their implosion and the time of whatever they come up with after the fact, there's going to be a period there where you need goods and services, so people need to become their own stores of value, and silver fills that billet, and so does gold. And so, you know, this is the reason. This is not investment advice. This is survival advice. There are other things you need. You know, if you can own a firearm legally, I would recommend that you have one. You know, some places that listen to the French Connection, they've already lost that right to have a rifle or a handgun. But if you're in a country that still has that right, I would certainly consider having that in my home as a protection, to protect both my family and the food sources that we have and everything else. Because, frankly, if people are out there with guns and they don't have food, they're coming for yours, I can guarantee you.
Well, yeah, exactly, and this is what people really need to bear in mind. I mean, what we're talking about with a complete financial collapse is we're talking about, literally, I mean, you know, will there be electricity? Will there be, I mean, all these sort of things people have to bear in mind. They have to think to themselves, right, what have I got now? There's me, I've got my property. How would I feed myself if there was no power, if there was no electricity? How would I keep myself warm? All these different bits and pieces. Now, I'm hoping all this won't happen in that sense, all this will be cut off, but it may well be.
Yeah.
Because if there's no money to pay for it, you know, how's it all going to work? And there's definitely going to be that point. So, as I say, I think that they need to... they'll probably keep the electricity on, actually, because they want to control the people through the media.
Well, you know, but at the same time, right, the you know, if you buy bags of rice, let's say a 25-kilo bag of rice, you'll eat that over the years. I mean, it doesn't spoil. You can eat it at your leisure. It's not a wasted product. So our pasta's not wasted. You know, canned goods can last 5 to 7 years. You know, dried beans are not going to spoil on you. All of these different things, lentils and the like. The fact is that it's not wasted if you spend it. It's an insurance policy against these eventualities. And I urge people that if you are close to the edge with money, and many of my listeners, you know, when they send in a dollar or a euro or a pound, it's because that's what they've got available, and I understand that. And I'm the same situation here. Andrew, I haven't worked in a long time, and, you know, I don't live in the lap of luxury here. The house is a work in progress, and you've seen it. The fact is that we all need to work from our means, through our means. Do we have enough? What can we afford? What do we need to survive? And the basics are food, clothing, shelter. Then you can move into how much silver you're going to need, then how much gold. But the first things are, you got to be warm in the winter. You got to have a food for your family. You got to have a roof over your head. Then we can start branching out from there.
Well, yes, I agree, and it's good the way the direction this show's taken, because I think it sort of gives us a chance to advise the listeners about, you know, look after your basic needs. What do you need for your basic needs? Because a lot of these, you know, shows out there with, I mean, we're still going. I think a lot of people, there was a guy years ago, it was all down to the Black Pope and stuff. I think he's now dropped out of circulation.
Yeah, yeah.
We just maintain the same message because we are right.
Yeah.
And so that's why we're still here. And when our direction hasn't really changed, because we found the criminals early on, and we've just literally, you know, fleshed out the situation as more things happen in the world, and also as we find out more in the research that we do with, you know, books like Dillings and Nestor Webster and
yep.
Douglas Reed and all
yep.
these different people that have written about them over time, and then put them up for people so they can, so you know, it's not just, you know, you and me here, there are a lot of people that preceded us that didn't have the luxury of the internet and what have you, but we've paid homage to them, to put their work out there, to help get this message across.
Well, you know, Andrew, I have to concur with you, you know, Ben Friedman's work and the rest, but at the same time, on the survival note, because I believe survival needs are going to start within the next few months here. I believe as soon as these Christmas figures come in January, and it becomes very clear that this is the worst Christmas sales period in history, and more high street stores are going to shutter up, and commercial real estate is going to fail, and you know, this is going to be the last shoe to drop, because there's a lot of bonds and there's a lot of credit derivative swaps and credit default swaps associated with these real estate deals. They're all going to go belly up, and it's going to be a huge failure in that area as well. And that's going to be the straw that breaks the camel's back. And at that point, you know, people are going to need their basics. Now, one of the things that I urge people to do is, if you've got family members you're still on talking terms with, discuss the idea of consolidating your families if you have to. You know, back in the 30s, people had to abandon farms and move in with mom and dad again, or they had to, they had to bunk up in small apartments together, because at least that way you're sharing expenses and you're sharing, the effort. It may come down to that. I mean, you know, certainly here, I hope I don't have to take in large numbers of my wife's family, but if that need arises, I would certainly be here to do that. I mean, these are the kinds of things that, you know, we have to start thinking about, because I believe those decisions are not far off into the future, sadly, for any of us. And the other thing is that the Internet is not going to be permanent. And I believe, you know, all they're going to need to do is sever the line to the Internet and stop bombarding us with television programming that tells lies. And they'll hope that that brings back the control they need. Fact is, the Internet may die, and the French Connection's information may go by the wayside. So download the books in hard copy and put them on discs, and put the programming on CDs and share them. You know, leave them at... Here's another good one. I want everybody... We've never had high school students involved in this. Now, I remember in the 1970s as a high school student, this would have been something I would have sunk my teeth into in a second. I would have loved to fight the man with the truth. The students in America are not part of the fight, and I've learned recently just how badly brainwashed our students are. But that doesn't mean we can't spread the idea into schools. That means I am the witness in a placard or stick it on a lamppost, IamTheWitness.com, for the truth. And put it near, you know, high schools, and put it near where students from, you know, age 14 to 18 are going to be. Look what the students in Greece have done over the killing of a young man. They took that country and tipped it upside down. Now, if that same kind of fire in the belly was in Britain or America, this would get these people scared to death. It worked in the 60s for a long time when young people were fighting back in the 1960s. They got very afraid of the youth getting angry, but that's one element that has not been with us. We need to get the youth involved.
Well, yes, I agree, Darrell. It's important to, I think, that people need to approach people with disinformation, and don't push it too hard on people that you're not going to have any, that you're just going to get constant resistance from, because you're going to waste your time there when you could be waking other people up.
That's right.
And the other thing I wanted to touch on is when you said about shops after the Christmas period, when they realise how bad their sales are, a lot of them will close. Well, people need to bear in mind they might have a shop near them that they go to for their food.
That's right, local shop.
That shop may close, and then they have to think, like, where's the next shop? And then you go to that shop, and that might be miles and miles away.
Well, you're right now. Do you remember the interview with Salente saying, start to think locally, begin to think on a local level? I think that is a trend that needs to be promoted. Even if it's going to cost you a couple of pence or a couple of pennies or per item more, start trying to go local and give the help to your local supply so that you have proximity, because proximity is a very important element to this battle. Absolutely.
Yeah, and I mean, this is the thing, you know, and then you might just have one big supermarket that a great deal of people are dependent on. They'll be like Russia, where people are queuing out the door. There's nothing on the shelves because the stores only want to stay open for what they can sell. They're not going to keep stores open that are going to run at a loss. So in the end, it'll be the people that suffer. And this is what they've been doing, all these supermarkets and what have you, over the years, you know, stealthily in the background, springing up in areas, undercutting. I mean, there was even a situation recently where there was a dry cleaners near this supermarket that also does dry cleaning near where I live. And the dry cleaners were doing two suits for £10. They were doing the dry cleaning, which was a good offer. And suddenly the supermarket, within a couple of weeks, they had it all branded up, leaflets that they were now doing two suits for £10. And they kept that on as long as this other person had their offer. And when the other person withdrew the offer, the supermarket withdrew the offer. And this is how they will go into local areas, they'll look at the local competition, and because of the size of their operation, they'll just undercut other people until they go out of business, and then it's just them. Everyone's dependent on the big organizations, and that's just what they want.
That's exactly what they want. And, you know, the smaller village high streets where you have a city of 30,000 or 40,000, and generally it's not the chains that set up on high street in the smaller towns and cities in America or in Britain. It's a guy who trying his hand at making a living and essentially has an interest in his community in many instances. And so what I think here, especially in my area, I live in a town with no businesses. My town has empty, shuttered places of business that were in the past probably very active companies, little businesses. They're shuttered and gone. There is no grocery store within a 35, 40-minute drive of me. And that's I have no choice. I have to go that far to get groceries. And the fact is, you know, local is going to be a very important element here. So if you need to spend, like I said, a couple of percentage points more to get that stuff from a local supply, then you might be well served to do that.
Well, yes, and I mean, I think that it's not so long ago that I was living in Dorset, and I lived in a small village there. Or rather a small village, and also lived in a small town. And there you had your local butcher, and he got meat locally. You had a local baker, and they got meat locally. There was still a supermarket there, I think a couple of little ones and what have you. But there was so much still of this. There was like a local hardware store that a guy ran, and it had been passed down from generation to generation. So these small sort of villages or towns, what have you, around the world, these are what people are going to be depending on more and more. And it's the people in the cities that are going to suffer because there's such a high volume of people in the cities. And if suddenly they haven't got much money, then their food sources and what have you are going to shut. And they're going to be, where do we go and get food?
Well, I fear with the so many people not living on the land anymore. You know, back in the 30s, we had an agrarian society in the United States especially, but still in Britain too. A lot of small farms were very prevalent throughout the countryside. Today, it's big mega farms. People don't grow their own foods anymore. Of course, the quality of the food they're eating may look better, but certainly the quality of it is not better. And instead, what we have is vegetables that look good with no minerals, no quality to them, full of pesticides, making us sick, allergies, and every other thing. Yeah, I got to say, you know, the quality of life issues and the survival issues are, at this point in time, every bit as important as the exposing of the criminals, in my view.
Well, yes, absolutely. I think what we, you know, we try to do two jobs here. One is to wake the listeners up to who's really behind this mess. And the other one is, you know, we're not messing about here. This is going to get very, very nasty very, very soon. And we want people to be prepared so that, you know, people listening to us today aren't going to be starving in a few months' time because they haven't prepared themselves for what's coming. I think a lot of people out there listen to this sort of these forecasts because they get some sort of, you know, fascination with them, and they think, oh, these people are probably a bit mad, but it's entertaining and what have you. You know, I can assure those people that we are not messing about. This is real. This is happening at the moment, and this is what it could well develop into. The other thing that I don't like to make predictions, but I do see, in order to take the internet, and they've been talking about Internet 2 for years, where they pick and choose what people could have, websites and what have you. I think that we're going to see something very big happen, probably in America, because one thing that they're desperate to do there, and they have been for decades, is to get the guns from the American people so they can't defend themselves. And I think that there'll be a joint operation, and it'll probably be some sort of white nationalist nonsense or something like that, which will say, right, we can't have any unlicensed websites because some people, you know, did this, went to something like Stormfront or whatever, and on top of that, they'll then say, oh, we need to take the guns as well. And this is what I think is coming. I don't like to make predictions, but that we know what they want, and they want to take the guns, and they want to
shut the internet,
and so we need to go a step further and say, right, how do they go about getting what they want? And they go about getting what they want, you know, how did they go about getting into Iraq and Afghanistan? Oh, simple, we'll just bring the World Trade Center down. I mean, I don't know what madman thought of that idea. You know, sitting down around the table thinking, how do we get in there? Oh, we'll just blow up the World Trade Center and fly two planes into it. I mean,
and plus, what they did also, Andrew, is they filled that World Trade Center up with documents that needed to get disappeared.
Yeah.
They ended up having asbestos throughout that building they needed to get rid of. And so basically, they were just looking at win-win-win all around themselves is what they were doing.
Yeah, and Building 7, of course, the reason that came down was that was where the, you know, the command and control center was.
Wait, they also held the records of the Enron scandal in there.
Ah, yeah, that's true. Yeah, and then, so all these different things, like you say, it's win-win-win for them, but this is why I say, you know, that I believe something's going to happen, and this is the sort of thing that they will pull off. I mean, Afghanistan, for me, was the what was his name, Mike Rupert or whatever, he's long gone now, I think, the peak oil guy.
Yeah.
And he was always pushing the gas pipeline and all that. What Afghanistan was 80 to 90% of heroin comes from the poppies there, and the Taliban had destroyed the crops. And as soon as we go in there, the first thing that happens is they have a bumper crop the next year, and Tony Blair's running around saying, oh, well, we can't prevent them from doing that, you know, we're trying, we can't. Well, how come the Taliban, that we were told were a bunch of people riding around on camels, how did they manage to get all the opium crop destroyed? And yet, you know, paramilitary British and American forces with all the weaponry and the planes and all that, they can't get it destroyed. It doesn't make any sense. The only way it makes sense is that if they are getting benefit out of the drug trade, which we know that they are.
That's right. And that goes back to Sassoon in Asia during the Opium Wars. It goes all the way back to Kushner over in Colombia behind you know, these Murano Jews that are behind the cocaine trade. You know, and then you can mix in there cocaine trade / pornography trade / international slave trade and trading in young girls and women for prostitution, and I mean it, and then you start digging under the surface and you find out the Lubavitch is involved, and you find out that the Zionist Jews are profiting, and Jewish banks are involved, and you know, Jewish run secret police forces that are being protective of these crime units. It's so sick. You know, when you put your mind into this research, it's really disturbing and stomach turning. I'm not a lily white guy in my life. I mean, but the depravity level here just eclipses anything I have ever seen. And I mean, you know, hey, coming from the 60s and 70s, I was a guy that could throw a few back with the best of them. But the fact is, this stuff goes way into the level of depraved sickness, in my view, and to intentionally inflict, you know, heroin addiction on a society, or cocaine addiction intentionally, or to have a meatpacking plant with a whole big segment of it being earmarked for manufacture of methamphetamine. I mean, who does this kind of stuff? What kind of monsters do this?
Well, this is it, and I think, you know, as I was growing up, I mean, it was always there's always an unwritten thing of, you know, isn't it great when society gets more permissive, you know, and it's, you know, they're now sort of swearing on television before the watershed, or, you know, this film's more violent than the previous film, and or this horror film's more, you know, horrific than another film, and it was always like this was a good thing type of thing.
Yeah.
And when we, you know, pornography, the sort of things that they get up to in pornography now, whereas, you know, years ago it was like putting a coin in a slot and like, you know, sort of in one of those 1920s, 30s, one of those machines that...
That's right.
...seen a woman getting undressed, and you see the stuff that they get up to now. And if you look at all this, then what you actually see is that this permissiveness has actually... It's all been about destroying the moral code that we had. And once you destroy the moral code, there's nothing left.
That's right. Anything goes then, Andrew. You know, anything's okay. You know, tattoo your forehead, pierce your skull, drill a hole through your nose and put a bone in there. You know, pierce your private parts, become a real sicko, walk around in prostitute clothing and think that this is all the a la mode. It really, you know, stinks. And then you start seeing the participation of people, groups like Tavistock promoting this, or you find out that Tavistock was behind the Rolling Stones, and of course they do songs like Sympathy for the Devil, and, you know, all these other depraved ideas. And I you understand that popular culture. This guy Robbie Williams, big Tavistock guy. They do his videos that they used to do with pictures of demons in the background and devils coming out of his face and, you know, fangs coming out of his teeth, and he's supposed to be this big sex symbol, and he's it's really got all this imagery to satanic stuff, and you see this stuff and you go, I couldn't make it up.
Well, yeah, and it's like this thing now that everyone from, like, Schwarzenegger to Bush does with their fingers, that sort of keeping their sort of little finger and their forefinger, like, up in the, they tried to say it was Texas Longhorns, but, I mean, Tex Mar's very big on the symbology and what have you, and, you know, this is a classic sort of devil image, you know? And,
well...
They've got everyone doing it, like this is the new sort of cool image to do and things like that. And, you know, it makes you wonder, you know, the depths that these people are going to is just astonishing.
Well, you know, Tex is somebody I want to bring up as our last subject here, because Tex recently did go on Alex Jones, and he actually came clean on this whole thing on Jones's show, which gave me a pause for hope here, because Tex has always been truthful on my program, and the fact that he hadn't been on Alex Jones's show was disturbing to both myself, you, and many others who have a relationship with Tex. But when that happened, Alex Jones is never going to be a truth teller. He's going to be an obfuscator, as far as I'm concerned, to the end. But the fact is, he still has a large audience, and any exposure, I think, helps people come to the realization that the crime gang is Zionist Jewish.
Well, yes, and I mean, I've mentioned before. I mean, I've never been happy that Tex and Alex Jones are. I mean, I know there's history there, but Tex tends to. You know, he has his own voice, and he will go on Alex Jones' program, and he won't turn around, and he will, whenever I've heard him interviewed, he does tell the truth.
Well, he did it. He went the whole nine yards with Jones one day, and it was really a great thing to hear, because Tex just let both barrels go and say the truth, and Jones didn't stop him, so... Again, whether or not, you know, he's controlled opposition is immaterial to the fact that I'm sure 100,000 people heard it. And so this added another nail in the coffin of the Christian Zionist and Jewish Zionist movement, because the first thing I would say to myself is, how come I'm only hearing this now on Alex Jones after 15 years of his research? How come he's only coming there now? That would be the first thing. And then I'd say, well, maybe that guy Smith and maybe that guy Hitchcock were right the whole time.
Well, yeah, and, you know, if we didn't do any more shows, I mean, the fact is what we've got in the archives, it's proving us right as the days go on.
That's right.
You know, we don't have to do anything more for this to be proved right, and other people in this movement are running around frantically because it's gaining so much exposure, and this is what's always going to happen. We knew it was going to happen because, in the end, they want to control the entire world. And there's only so long you can do that behind the scenes until you get overtly out there and show yourself. We talk about the Bush cabinet and the Clinton, and Barack Obama's cabinet. I mean, again, you've got the Zionists in there up to their neck. And, they're getting more and more brazen. But I think things aren't going as well for them as they were hoping.
I think you're right. Andrew, with that, we're going to leave it there. We're over an hour, and I appreciate you doing this with me. You know, an hour on the French Connection is like 2 hours on any other program. We do this commercial free. I want to remind everybody that, you know, my income over here is very limited. I do appreciate help if you've got any, because frankly, there is no advertising on the French Connection, and CII has never paid me any money. And the support for my work and for the things I'm doing comes from you listeners, and I do appreciate it when it comes. So keep me in mind this holiday season, because I have needs to eat and pay my phone bill like everybody else, and I could use your help. In the meantime, I want to thank you again, Andrew. You are as always a great person to interview, because you know you've done your due diligence, and you've come to the same conclusions as I have, not because I'm saying it, but because you've done your work, and it's there. It's right in your face.
Well, yes, and I'd encourage the listeners as well to, the French Connection is a wonderful source, not just for the interviews, but all the books and what have you that are up there that you'd have to hunt around. Most of them are out of print anyway, and you'd be hunting around on the internet trying to find them in their entirety, where they are on Darrell's site. I don't accept donations, and I encourage people that want to support me to donate to Darrell at the French Connection to keep that wonderful site and program going.
Well, you know, you have a new website coming up soon. You want to give out that information?
Yeah, at some point. I'm putting it all together now, building it, fingers crossed. It's I'm going to have all the interviews I've done up there that people can download for free if I can get that working. And the whole book will be up there for free, and I'll just see where it takes me. I might put a couple of news items up each day. I don't want to sort of, you know, you get some of these sites like Rents or whatever that will literally put up 30, 40 items a day, which just, you know, I don't bother even looking at, because it's just too much information for people to get. You try and get the sort of choice stuff so that people can learn something useful rather than the UFO nonsense and what have you.
Again, Andrew, thank you so much for doing this with me. I know we were scheduled to do something out of South Africa together, and that fell through, and then I got canceled all last week, and I'm fed up with all the missteps and problems, but we'll have to see what happens with that going forward. You put an effort into something, getting somebody to come on, and all of a sudden you get your legs taken out from under you. So until the next time, Andrew, I thank you very much for coming on. We will be on together again, fate willing. Hang on to your hat over there, will you?
Oh, yeah, we'll do, buddy.
All right, well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of this particular installment of The French Connection. I want to thank you all for being with me here on this broadcast. And until the next time, please take care of your families, heed the warnings we have made today, and please, be well. Bye-bye now.